and Mice Podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy, Mike Eagle, is there as well. Tice and Mice Podcast. Tice and Mice.
Tights and fights. We're here to talk pro wrestling on the podcast.
Tights and fights.
We will never stop talking about wrestling. Tights and fights.
Welcome to
Tights and Fights
Remix,
the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity it deserves. I'm Hal Lublin, and as always, I'm joined in the booth by fellow members in the Nation of Conversation, comedian and writer Danielle Radford.
Thank you. I invented the remix.
And hip-hop artist Mike Eagle.
I also enjoy remixes.
It's a remix party. Every week, we start out, as most great wrestling matches do, with The Lockup, where we talk about our personal experience with sports entertainment. Last week, we talked a lot about championship belts, as Raw and SmackDown are each set to debut brand new titles. So let's talk about the design of championship belts. What is your favorite championship belt design? And let's open this up. We can take it. It can be WWE, WCW, AWA, ECW, anything you can think of. Favorite belt designs, go.
Oh, man. I don't have an interesting answer at all. Because, like, really, it is... It's that old Eagle belt, man. The one, the big bird belt, yeah. Man. The one that was retired by
Michaels was the last person to have it. Is that right?
Was it?
Because it changed. There was a double Eagle design,
right,
that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels had, and then Austin had the newer version of it where there was a center, like the center medallion didn't have the wings popping out of it.
I like it. With Austin, I can only remember the smoking skull belt, and I can't remember what the hell happened after that at all. But just that iconic double bird, the other birds, not the Austin birds, the real birds, wing, that's the one like I like the most. I mean, it's just iconic. It just reminds me of Hogan when he wasn't racist and Ultimate Warrior. And, like, you know, everything else before childhood was ruined, I think, is encapsulated in the double bird design.
It is a great, like, classic belt. And it went through a couple different versions from when Hogan first won. It was that big green belt that had, like, the trophy plaques on it for each champion.
Yeah.
And then it was the smaller belt that looked more like the European, where it had the different flags on it. And they settled on that eagle design. And you looked at, like, a good belt, you look at it and it conveys the level at which it sits. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do always like when they have the placards on the side so that they can be kind of individualized.
Right.
That is way better than having a belt that spins. Just way better than a spinning belt.
So yours is the spinner US belt, right, Danielle?
I will murder you. Slowly, but painfully. I love the Gift of the Gods on Lucha Underground. It's great looking. I like that. Again, I'm a sucker for any time little things fit into the belt and you can take them off. I don't know. Maybe, and it, you know, and I, maybe it's just because I like so much like old school anime and old school like Power Rangers and stuff. I like that it's like, oh, my sigil's on there now. Like, I think that's so stupid, but it's so dope. But I cannot love that new women's belt enough, y'all. It's so good. And the old women's belt was great, but just anything that's not that, like, Lisa Frank, like, baby's first tattoo belt is going to be, like, my favorite.
It's a stencil!
Yeah, it shouldn't look like a Pandora
you
charm.
Guys,
yeah.
I got my notebook tattooed on my back and then put on my championship belt.
It's like the Trapper Keeper championship of the world.
Yeah. Like, this feels like people hurt themselves for it. Right. And that's what a championship title is supposed to feel like. It's supposed to feel like someone could be injured getting it, not like, I did my nails and they match my belt. Because, like, the women are athletes. So, and besides, obviously, like, the fact that it marks a huge change between the Divas era and the women's era, it's also just kind of like a real pretty belt. I like the white on red. I think it looks good. Reminds me of strawberry cheesecake. I'm down.
It does look delicious.
It does look so good.
Yeah, it looks like a cake. Like if a wrestling, like it's your 16th birthday. We know you love wrestling, so we made a cake belt.
Yo,
for
my
you.
Birthday is coming up.
I'm saying.
If there's any cake makers who listen to this show and live in LA, and I would feel comfortable telling you what my birthday is and when you can find me on
and
it.
And where you live.
Oh, yeah.
Please make me a belt cake.
Make the cake. We'll take a picture of it at Max Fun, and then we'll eat it live during the next recording, which won't be bad at all for people who are listening because everybody loves the sound of other people chewing, right?
It's like ASMR. We'll just do it like that. It'll be an all ASMR episode of Tits and Bites.
I would like to be powerbombed into the cake. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll still eat it. I don't give a fuck.
Awesome.
Floor cake.
I'm Kevin Owens. I will eat that cake right off your back, son.
All right,
it's my birthday.
Let me throw a belt out there.
Yes.
I'll catch your belt.
I have two that I really like. One is that classic tag team championship design that was like the 80s all the way through, I'd say like the mid-2000s to the late, whenever they brought out the new ones that I don't like. Yeah. That was like a good classic belt. Mm-hmm. But the one that I'm going to throw out there is the European Championship.
It was a great
belt.
Ooh,
that was a good belt.
It was just like a good-looking belt that you want. Like, a good belt looks cool and you want to have it.
Yeah.
And that was one that never really took off. It was always just sort of something that was felt like it was thrown in to spice up a feud. But it was a good-looking belt.
And it managed to look different than the world title and the intercontinental title and still, you know, have a little flavor all its own.
Yeah, it was its own thing.
Yeah.
Just out there, being brave, doing its own thing.
R.I.P. European belt.
Aww.
Also, R.I.P. hardcore belt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which was a fantastic design. Like, wasn't it like the first heavyweight championship belt and they like glued it together?
I know. And,
like
and when I was younger, I was like, how does it stay together every time? Young Danielle didn't know about glue or like screws and stuff. Like fasteners.
Did you grow up in a box? How did you not know about those things?
Do I look sewy? Do I look like the person that sews?
No, but you look like somebody who was in school where they have those things that attach things to things.
Well, our school system has let us down.
Was this Seattle? Was this Seattle school?
It was Tacoma.
Oh.
So.
Some children left behind.
Yeah. Most children left behind.
Let's talk for a second. This was a special week. We're going to talk about some of the specific goings-on of Raw, of course. But one of the three of us, I'm looking at you, Danielle, was live in attendance in Anaheim.
What?
Give us the scoop on being there live. What didn't we see on TV?
Okay, well, so there were the two, and I watch wrestling. I do not know when Superstars is on.
I think it's only on the network.
Yeah, I feel reasonable in saying that I don't know and that most people don't know when that's on. And so the Superstars, it started with Jack Swagger versus Jinder. And there is something as a person of color that's real unsettling about a bunch of people chanting We the People in USA at a brown dude. Mm-hmm. It was really, it was very unsettling.
Oh, and you're in Orange County.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a place where We the People in could happen, for sure.
Yes.
So we kept yelling, and I don't know, this is a thing if you've ever read on Up Rocks, Brandon Stroud does the best and worst of Raw, and he used to do this thing called Jack Thwagger of Marth, where it was like a Princess of Mars parody. And so me and I went with my boyfriend, who's also Mark Derek Lemos, we just kept yelling, go back to Marth, like every time people start chanting USA, and it wasn't terribly appreciated. What else did we see? Sami Zayn had a match I do not remember against who, because it was still Superstars.
Right,
because
he wasn't all Raw proper.
No.
Interesting.
We did get like a mini Cena versus AJ Styles match. Like, I think just as long as the commercial break was. And then probably like, welcome to my house, which I can live without hearing that again, because they played that song.
Your impression's so spot on.
don't have to go away. Welcome to my house. Yeah, no, I can deal with not listening to that anymore.
My friends and I just went through a series like, welcome to my house. Please take off your shoes now. We just got new carpets. We don't want your footprints. Like, just how many different things could happen inside your house.
Bad, bad things. They were, yeah, it was not... So, yeah, so AJ comes out and everyone pops real big for AJ because no one's expecting him.
Now, this is after Raw or between?
This is between. So, this AJ versus Cena happened like during a commercial break. It was so quick. It was literally like AJ comes out and he's like, hey, I know I'm on SmackDown, but I'm here to do my favorite thing. Beat up John Cena. And then he
did he just say that?
Yes.
Yes.
And so he like runs into the ring and then you hear burr, burr, burr. And then John like runs out and like does a thing. And then like, I think he ate him and then, they left. It could not have been longer than 3 minutes. This whole thing from the time that AJ's music started to like everything, and so that happened.
That's so interesting because I read that they did the same thing, maybe not last week, but the week before. That there was a dark match after Raw that AJ and Cena were on, and that's so interesting to me because they're supposed to like part of this whole thing is that they're all supposed to get this extra day off now. It's like,
right?
Okay, well, why do these guys have to go to Raw?
Our dark match after the show was Orton versus Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, so smart.
And you know what? I will say, if you have not seen the Fireflies in person, it was awesome. Yeah, and Randy came out and he had that, like, you know how I make fun of, like, Uha and, like, all those dudes for being too grateful when they come out? Randy had a grateful face on, and I was like, okay. And he was just like, literally, he comes out. There's still a bunch of people in there, and he goes, and he's like, you can see it from, because I got floor seats. What? not because I have money. It was just luck. So Randy comes out and he's like, thank you guys so much for sticking around, doing grateful face. And then him and Bray like went at it. And it was a dope match. It was really, really good. You know, I think he beat the dreadlocks off of Bray, but I don't really, I got hit in the head. So I try to take notes where I can. What else? So when they come in, you know how they do the entrance musics for the announcers? Cole got music. Byron does not have music.
Wow.
So Byron just like came out.
He just walks out to silence?
He walks out to Cole's music. It hurt. It hurt real bad. there was this thing, and I like it was after or it was a in between the, like probably during a commercial break for the Enzo and Cass versus Jericho and Owens thing where they're like doing a cute back and forth before the bell rings. Jericho calls out Enzo for doing street jokes and the comedian me is like, yeah. And they start doing this thing where like where they start doing different versions of the how you doing. Like at one point, Jericho goes, how are you, eh? And Kevin goes, oh yeah? Well, what happens when you get beat in this ring? Huh? How are you? You're not very good. That's how you are. It was like super, super, super funny. What else? We didn't get to see the jobber thing. Like they didn't show that to us in the arena, like in the beginning when he was talking backstage.
The interview.
Yeah, the interview. Okay. We did get to see the thing with Puff Daddy, and Puff Daddy is not over in Anaheim. Oh boy. Puff Daddy is not over.
They let them boo birds out when he came out?
No, them boos. Oh, them boos. Almost as bad as the boos anytime Roman did literally anything.
Wow.
And that cake thing no one cared about.
That's
really? Because it came across as like real hot.
Nah.
Watching it on television. Like nah. It seemed like there was some noise being made.
Nah. It was, I mean, maybe when you get that many people, but I just like where I was at and from the people that I could see, like no one. But you know, if half of the people there made some noise because noise is the thing to do at that point, it's going to sound like a lot. But you know, no one cared. And plus, I was also cranky because it's like, who crashes like a wedding? Although that was one of like the better promos I think we've seen him.
But see,
do.
That's, you know, I would disagree because as soon as he started talking, I'm like, no. Nobody wants talkie Roman.
No one
like
wants
silent,
running.
Silent, badass Roman is cool. Talkie Roman?
Too much,
no.
Yeah. No, it was fun. Like when he first came out, which is like you don't have a best man, I was like, this could go somewhere, and then it didn't.
And then yeah, you didn't satisfy her on your wedding night. Like what?
Why
like,
are you talking?
Like
you?
First
why
of all,
are you? Why are
right,
you?
Like Who asked you to come out here, first of
all? Thank you. Did nobody invite you?
Right. And now you're going to come talk about the man's sexual prowess?
You come with an attitude. He just got married. He's wearing that fancy suit. Did nobody ask you, Roman? And what's your contacts?
And he's the United States champion. If the man wants to celebrate his wedding with his wife, let him do it.
Thank you.
You know, that's not...
I love love. I was mad. I was like, I appreciate their love. Their wedding was probably B to D star studded. There was probably a Bella there.
I loved, I actually loved that segment until Roman came out. Not even because of everything that followed, just it was fun to see the two of them building heat together. Because I haven't seen that in a long time. It's usually she comes over and makes a vague reference, I mean, not vague, but sort of a weak reference to the fact that nobody else can have her and she's desired. But to really, like, push that super hard will make people boo whether they actually want her or not.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see them invest in that a little bit.
And then, like, of course, you have to push the pretty woman in the cake because women get punished or whatever.
Something's weird. You know, it's. I've read a lot of weird stuff about Lana and backstage and politics and all that, but they really have definitely, like, demoted her character slowly but surely. I mean, there was a time when Rusev wouldn't end a match without looking at her for permission.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
At least the accolade.
And then Rusev crushed it, and that's it. But now, like, she's just there and talking about how he's the only person that can have sex with her. And I feel that's knocked her down a couple pegs in terms of, you know, the impression.
She's no longer in charge.
Right.
On the bright side, at least it wasn't that cheesecake that we're going to have for Danielle's birthday.
That's right.
Please.
Of the belt.
I'm going into that cake.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll discuss the wrestling news from this week that's worth talking about. You're listening to Tights and Fights.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert, and we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? Right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin. With me in the studio are
Danielle Radford
and
Mike Eagle.
And it's time for Headliners, the part of our show where we break down the biggest news and angles of the past week in wrestling. Let's start off with the news that got a lot of wrestlers sounding off on Twitter. Conor McGregor, the MMA fighter, insulting WWE talent and saying he doesn't respect any of them. And this is actually something that's been going on for a while now, with UFC owner Dana White himself calling wrestling fake. So does this actually signal the UFC and WWE intersecting with each other and crossing over in a way beyond one of them borrowing Brock Lesnar from the other?
Ugh, I don't.
Because it feels like one of those kayfabe, like, we're trying to get something going. And if people start talking about how we're arguing over whether wrestling is fake or real or what have you, that'll drum up interest in a match. Like, they're trying to build towards it. Do you guys get that sense?
Maybe. They've been, you know, WWE has been begging for Ronda for a while. Of course, that kind of cooled off when she got her head kicked in. But, like, they were trying for a while to get Ronda in. Dana knows how to sell. If nothing else, that man knows how to sell stuff. And I feel like there's been enough of, like, Lady doth protest too much on both sides, that it could be that they're working both of us with this, if for no other reason than to make us have conversations like this. Because honestly, I don't want to see none of those UFC dudes try to talk on a mic. I don't need it. I don't want it.
Right.
I don't need it.
But you don't need them to talk. You could have them come in like a Brock Lesnar who, you don't need to speak to be effective. You just want to see that, like, I don't remember Lawrence Taylor talking a lot before he fought Bam Bam Bigelow. It was just idea, the spectacle of it.
Who's that chubby dude that fought Bones?
Oh, jeez.
I'm at a loss, too. I don't pay attention to that stuff much. I don't really.
Anyway, he can come because he can get it. So he can come to WWE.
But are you interested in that?
I'm not. I don't. First of all, this whole controversy, I can't even pay attention to it because it's like millionaires arguing. And I can't get involved. I just can't. I can't get involved. It's rich people fighting each other. I'm like, God damn it. I hate it.
You have no interest in the petty squabbles of millionaires.
Right. Like, they're all, you know, they're all doing great. And I don't think it's going to build to anything because, like, Connor, you know, for being awesome at what he does, was he like 150 pounds or something like that? Like, who are they going to match him up with in a possible kayfabe wrestling match? I don't really know. Like, they don't have anybody of his name value at that size in WWE, really. So I don't really know.
Maybe he can fight Floyd Rida. Flo Rida seems to come out every once in a while and want to hit somebody in the face. Maybe just be him.
Oh, no, they'll just have another terrible rap battle. That's what will happen because everything hurts me.
Well, Sasha called him out, so.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she did.
What'd she say?
I think it was literally just like, bring it, or like, I'll take you on, or like something like that.
Yeah.
Because she lippy.
She'll stretch him out.
Because she's real lippy.
She'll stretch him out real nice. Yeah. But they're sort of painting themselves into a corner because either you go in and you have... You put over your WWE superstar in a crossover match because you need to protect that brand. That's the brand that's really at stake here because it's saying it's all fake, it's not real, UFC is way better. So WWE needs the win there. But also, if the UFC guy comes in and loses, then it lowers both. Like, there's no way to raise both brands up unless you give it like a dusty finish.
I mean, I think the only thing that can raise both brands up is what just happened with Brock, where you have a WWE guy in a legit fight and win. That's the best possible outcome.
That's the best possible.
You know, like, I don't know how you top that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it would have to be someone who's like, oh, I just want to go be a millionaire over there where I don't get hit as hard. And then just go do, and then come back and swap between the two. But I don't want it to be Connor if it's going to be any of them.
Right.
Well, the real solution is another Brawl for All.
Sin Cara would win that. I just realized
that. You think so?
He knocks out everybody. That's what Sin Cara does. I don't know if you guys read as much wrestling gossip as I do.
And also himself.
But Sin Cara has knocked out like three people.
But Seth Rollins, too. He'll break your nose.
Well, that's true. But I mean, like in the back, like over catering, Sin Cara will knock you out.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Sin Cara threat.
Him and Alberto Del Rio.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, that's a hell of a tag team.
Yeah, a lot
right
of
there.
Fight. Yeah, just the guys who start actual fights backstage. Yeah.
Don't be racist. Del Rio, get you.
Well, let's go from backstage Monday Night Raw to out of the screen, where Cesaro was a total workhorse this week. He wrestled two solid matches on Monday night, including one that was in the main event for the U.S. title against Rusev. Cesaro is one of those guys who's been called one of WWE's most underutilized talent. He's got a big internet fan base. People have followed him since he was Claudio Castagnoli or whatever his actual name is.
That was a great, great attempt.
Thank you. I tried. I tried. I tried to say his name. It didn't really go well. So he does seem like, even though he's getting a lot of screen time, that he's one of those guys who loses more than he wins. So my question for you is, do you think that things are starting to actually turn around for the Swiss Superman? Is he headed for a larger push where he actually has a sustained winning streak, or they put a belt on him? Like, where's he going?
I want that to be what happens. I don't know if that's what's happening because it always seems like there are so many false starts with Cesaro that I never know if this is going to be the one that, like, sticks. And I love the dude, but, like, it seems like as soon as he starts getting momentum, he starts running off at the mouth, and I don't know what of it is a shoot and what he's allowed to say and what is, you know, I don't know what the difference between that is, but it seems like every time they start to get him going, he gets cut off at the knees. Like, every time. So I guess I just don't want to be hopeful because I like that dude. I think he's great. I think that he is, like, he's clearly incredibly strong. He's clearly, like, he looks like a bald-ass Greek god.
Yeah.
Like, he's the total package, and they have not pulled the trigger on him yet. And every time you think they're going to, they just never do. And it's frustrating.
I think he's the ultimate victim, like the poster boy for 50-50 booking and how that completely takes all of the steam, because it creates the environment of what you just said. It's like people feel like they're reluctant to get behind him again, because every time you have some hope in him, you know, he does the job. But like, I also think there's a huge problem with his gimmick. I think there's a real confusion on his, you know, he walks out like James Bond and like tears his clothes off like Chippendales.
Yes.
And it's like,
Please continue.
It's not so much. I mean, it's an awesome visual, and I feel like if they only did that like once a month or, you know, or something, then it'd be different. But to come out there every time and do that, it is a weird. It just creates like this weird disconnect. Like, what is the gimmick trying to do? Like, you know what I mean? Like, in the ring, is he no longer cool? Like, you know what I mean?
Like, because it was really dope the first time he did it. And now he does it every time. And you're right. If they saved it for pay-per-views or for something where he would, or for special occasions where he comes out and does something, and then all of a sudden he's not, he rips off his clothes, it's dope. But if it's part of his entrance, it does kind of lose part of that.
Yeah, because I don't know what it's trying to communicate. And I feel like for the casual fan, it's probably the same thing as well. Like, because the moves that he's getting over for, they don't go with tearing his suit off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I can see how every time he does it, like, it's dope to us because we remember the first time he did it. But I can see how folks are like, is he going to start scripping?
Right.
Like, is he?
I don't have as big a problem with that aspect, just because that's been his thing, is he always wears suits.
Yeah.
So he goes from, like, refined gentleman to I'm going to kick your ass and break your arm.
European gentleman.
Immediately, yeah. So my thing with him is, and maybe this is, again, because he's a victim of that 50-50 booking and we've been let down before, is I'm just so happy to see him wrestling every week and wrestling important matches that the wins and losses don't matter as much. Mm. But also at a certain point, you're like, well, when are you going to get – you have to give, in my mind, people like that a run at a certain point,
right. Yeah.
So that they stay relevant. A win, yep, over them has to mean something if you're going to use them to elevate people or to prove somebody's tough. But in his case, wrestling two matches, it feels like they're lining him up for something, whether it's a run at the U.S. title afterwards. But it did also, like, a guy like that chasing after a title, even if he doesn't have a match at SummerSlam, to me, helps elevate the title a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say one more thing, and I need to just put this on tape. I'm damn tired of the uppercut train. Done.
No.
Done.
Really?
Done. Like, to me, at this point, especially when he's in a match with more than one person and he starts going around the ring, I audibly groan every time. Because it does, like, that's one of those things that just takes me out of a match. Like, you're trying to win the match. Why are you running around making yourself tired? You know what I mean? Like, you want to punch somebody.
Yeah, no, I love that cartoony shit.
I hate it so much. Like, I get it. I think I get it, or I can appreciate it if it's to make one move more impactful. But if you keep doing the move over and over again, it just makes my brain hurt.
Like, right. I'm just saying, are you doing this? If there was a way that they could get like five dudes and one chick together and they make a Voltron of wrestling, I would never. I already only ever watch wrestling. I would never. That's it. I would be like, make a movie, take all my money. Like, I love that cartoon. That's why I like Lucha Underground so much. Mm.
Well, then that you actually gave us a perfect segue. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
Segue.
Thank
you.
Season 3 of Lucha Underground now is a premiere date. It's September 7th. I've seen, full disclosure, about 15 to 20 minutes of a single episode. I thought it was fine. It didn't really grab me to the point where I need to go check it out. I probably will now, just to keep more abreast, since I have to talk about wrestling for an hour and have stuff to say every week outside of WWE.
But like a living or whatever.
Yeah. Are you guys excited about, are you planning on watching? Because Mike, you don't really watch Lucha Underground,
I don't. And it's, Lucha Underground is something that when I think about it, I get really excited. And I love what it stands for. I love everything they're trying to do. But there's two things happening. One, it's 5 hours of WWE every week already, plus pay-per-views, and like I'm done.
Plus
and
NXT, plus.
Yeah, plus I'm watching
plus
Cruiserweight Classic.
Classic.
Yeah, like really, really, it's getting tense in my house right now. It's getting tense. Like, you know what I mean?
WWE
like,
trying to break
you
up
know
relationship.
What I mean?
Yeah.
It's bad. There is one main television, and we cannot do this every night. And the other thing that's going on with me is that, like, for all the stuff when I do watch it, I really love. I I am somewhat uncomfortable with, like, the male-female intergender matches and the girls getting beat up by the guys. And, like, there's something in me where I just can't, like, I don't know, that takes me out of it, too.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I definitely, if I have that on at home and my wife is there, she's like,
uh-uh. Right, and you're trying to be like, no, but it's different.
Because it's Lucha. Because
one of them will win. Sometimes women win. Right. And she's like, well, show me that one then.
Right.
Why are we messing around with the one where she get beat up?
So what ends up happening is, you know, with those things in place, it just ends up being lower on my priority list of watching and a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah. I was, again, fortunate enough to be able to get that email in the first 10 minutes. So I got to see a lot of Lucha the upcoming season. I got to go to, like...
You were there in the temple.
Shit ton of tapings. I think I told you guys this before. There's one, it's going to be real embarrassing for me because I'm, like, right behind the announcers and I'm leaning over because my back hurts because that time a bus hit it.
Ouch.
Yeah. Ugh. A little painful sometimes. And I'm leaning forward and I'm wearing, like, a V-neck. Oh. And, like, I look over...
Hi, girls.
Yeah. Yo, I look over and, like, the director or whoever is, like, giving me this look and I realize that it looks like I'm just, like, presenting myself for the camera. So if that episode comes on, I guess I'll show it to you guys so you guys can see.
Oh, no. We're going to be famous.
Yeah.
I am wearing no makeup. My hair is in a puff, and I'm just, like, wearing my relaxy gray dress because I'm like, it's a long day. So from the matches that I've seen and from the stuff that I've seen, and obviously I can't talk about any of it or they don't let you back in the temple, next season's going to be dope. Hmm. It's going to be really good. There are at least, like, I was there, and there are at least, like, 7 to 10 matches where I'm like, I am super ready to see how this works in context. Because I think that what they do is that they do everything. They try to, obviously part of it is because of scheduling, and then part of it is they don't want spoilers. So they tape stuff out of order. And right. So you'll just see, like, Melissa changing dresses.
Yeah.
And her shoes will change, and then they have to put those little, like, they look like those little pizza tables that they use at Domino's. They put those on her heels so she don't fall over when she's going up onto the... Wow. Into the ring. I feel like that's the one thing I can probably spoil. They look like little clear pizza tables, and you put it on the heel because you wear such high heels so she doesn't, like, fall over getting into the ring. But yeah, so it's I from what I have seen, it is going to be incredibly worth it to watch this season. It's going to be really dope.
All right.
But again, like, I just see they don't tape. And, you know, you don't get to see, like, the stuff in Cuerto's office. You don't get to see, like
all the stuff that ties it together with the storyline, right?
Which is the stuff I don't really, that didn't really, I want to be supportive of all different kinds of storytelling, but it just did not grab me. I love watching Lucha-style wrestling because it's the most like a dance of any of, and that's like one way to sort of describe it to someone who doesn't really know pro wrestling is they're doing a dance, it's choreographed. Well, that's really choreographed, and they have to be precise and fast, and so when it's clicking, it's incredible to watch. I almost to the point where I don't care what the story is because I'll get it physically. Like, I don't care what happened before, and I really don't care as much what happened afterwards, but maybe I'll try to get more invested in this season.
Again, it's just like, it's crazy, you know. It's crazy Aztec superheroes and stuff. I am 100% in.
Yeah.
I am someone who, and I'm going to start, I think, recapping it on, like, Medium or something because I love it so much. I am someone who has seen every episode of WMAC Masters. I love that craziness. So, all like, right. To me, that's, like, old school, like, crazy storytelling and, like, superheroes. And I'm, like, so in.
All right. Well, let's talk about some heroes that we all have.
Heroes.
So we talked about Dolph Ziggler's renewed fire as a competitor last week, but hidden away in all of that is the fact that Ziggler's got a new finisher, and it's the super kick. So it's become a really commonplace move present day.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like the reverse crescent kick, which later became...
The Savat kick at one point.
Yeah, Savat kick, the sweet chin music, whatever you want to call it. It's become a move that almost everybody does, but now it's Dolph Ziggler's finisher, and it has all the great components of a finisher. It's powerful. You can do it anywhere, anytime. It can come out of nowhere, and it looks devastating. But the question is, is he worthy? Is like that a good finisher for him? Is he the guy who should have it? Because almost he's inherited it from Shawn Michaels the way that Seth Rollins has inherited the pedigree from Triple H.
Well, the difference with Seth Rollins is he had no choice because they got rid of the dope move that he had and then gave him the pedigree. So he didn't have a choice. It was just like, well, you can't do that thing that you've done that we all like, so I guess you can have like my old move or whatever.
But they gave him that. They could, like, I mean, he's capable of doing a million
that's
other
true.
Moves. But that is an intentional choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a passing of the torch in a way.
Yeah.
This is, and does this mean that people stop using the super kick except for
No, him? Absolutely not, because it still happens every show, right?
Right.
I've not seen it used any less by anyone else.
And I've always thought that, like, unless you're the Young Bucks, a super kick should, it shouldn't just be like a regular old transitional move. Like, it's the super, you should, a dude is kicking you in the face. Unless it's the Young Bucks, you should be knocked out.
Yeah.
So I like it. I don't hate it as Ziggler's move, especially now that he's like Angry Hulk Ziggler. It like makes sense for him to have like a, oh, all that pretty stuff I used to do, nah, I'm gonna just kick you in the face because I'm ready to win this time. So for me, with the change in his character, like, it makes sense because he's still a face, so there's only so brutal you can make him. You can't make him the guy who's like, I need to win, I'm angry to win, so I'm gonna, you know, kick the crap out of you out of a match or any of the other normal things you can do because he's a face. You give him that move, which is a brutal move, but it's still legal, and you it comes across that like anger and that I want to win and I will do anything to win without making him a heel.
But here's the problem is when Shawn Michaels does it, he could come back and do it now, and he'll do those 3-foot stomps and go in the corner, and you'll get real excited, and there's something about him doing it that makes it feel more special than when anybody else does it. When Dolph Ziggler does it, it looks great. Dolph Ziggler is awesome. I'm a big mark for Dolph Ziggler, but everybody's doing that move. So you have to, at a certain point, go on SmackDown, nobody else uses the super kick. It is his finisher now. That's how you make it special.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like, if my finisher is a body slam, even if it looks great, guess what? Everybody does body slams.
Yeah,
how is that a finish?
But I think part of the problem with Ziggler is that he's transitioned his character so much into like Shawn Michaels light that it's like, I don't even know if this is a good idea to like do a finisher that's going to make me think of the guy you're trying to be like all the time. You know, I feel like maybe it's best if you have your own move. You know what
give
I mean?
Me the bucks. Just give me the bucks.
Right. You might as
stop
well.
Stop messing around.
It's just get
give me them bucks.
Sign them, Titan. Sign them.
Yeah, I hope it's sort of a transition for whatever his next finisher is, because he needs something different.
He needs something of his own.
Yeah.
You know, and he needs to not, I don't know if somebody told him to go out there and try to be Shawn Michaels all the time or if he just feels like he should, but I certainly think that is a bad idea because he's not. Like, he has all of the physical gifts of Shawn Michaels, but that charisma, like, all that personality. Like you mentioned, like, Shawn, the foot stomp, he got that move over. He got it over. You know what I mean? And, like, now it's over, and now you're using it, but you didn't get it over. And you haven't really gotten anything over. You know what
I
mean?
To be fair, I think Dolph's smile died, like, 8 times.
I hear you.
It's fine, his career.
But I've never been a Dolph fan, so.
He's all right.
Yeah, I've never been down.
I hope he gets a smile back. You're listening to Tights and Fights. We'll be back in just a minute.
Attention, Europe. This fall, Maximum Fun is bringing a bunch of your favorite podcasters to London. Catch Judge John Hodgman, International Waters, and Bullseye all recording live episodes at the London Podcast Festival. We'll have fan meetups and we'll be joined on stage by a glittering array of celebrity guests. The London Podcast Festival runs September 22nd through 26th, and you can buy your tickets right now. Just go to MaximumFun.org.
And Welcome back to Tights and Fights. With me in the booth to talk about all things wrestling are
Danielle Radford
and
Mike Eagle.
Yay! Every week we have an in-depth conversation about one of the finer points of wrestling. This is our main event. It happened last night, but as of this recording, it has yet to happen. Round two of WWE's Cruiserweight Classic has kicked off. So let's take a look at how good it's been so far and talk about what it could mean for Raw when they introduce their Cruiserweight division to live television in a few months. I'm going to start by saying, before we recorded, I was talking to Danielle. I was like, let's see how many of the people I can name who made it through it. I got a few of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't... The big issue, and I think this is an issue that you've talked about before, Mike, also, is I don't know who a lot of these guys are. Mm-hmm. So they're putting on really good matches, but I don't know what it means for each one who's advanced.
Yeah.
Other than management likes them and maybe they'll get a contract.
Well, even some of the guys that have lost seem like they're hanging around NXT. So, I mean, you know, I think some guys that went out in the first round still might mess around and get a contract. There has been a lot of people who I didn't know going in, and even after watching, I didn't remember very much. Mm. But there have been a couple of really, really great matches and some real standouts, I thought. That Gargano-Ciampa match.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like, that was a great piece of business. And I can't say I've really ever seen any of their matches before. Like, I know they've been around NXT as a tag team for a while, but... That match was incredible to me, just like the brutality and the passion and all of it. Like I was super into that. And there's been a couple others I was really into too. I like the Ibushi and Sean Maluda match. I was really into that one as well. I thought both of those guys got over really well. You know.
Yeah, Maluda was really he was a nice surprise for everybody that was expecting it to be sort of a first round walk for Ibuda. Like all these guys came in. I mean, I don't think are there any performances or any people from round one who either of you thought were sort of phoning it in? Because I didn't really get that.
Everyone was fighting like this is like my shot. And like, and Swan's already in, he's already in NXT.
Yeah.
And I much prefer him in this version than when he was being fed to friggin' Baron Corbin. All of them, I love the presentation of the Cruiserweight Championship. First of all, I love the presentation. I love the way it looks. I love the way that it feels like a fight. I love Daniel Bryan as an announcer, even
He's
when
great.
He totally like is in the tank for his boy, the Bryan Kendrick. I like that Mauro isn't making hip-hop references every other second like he does on SmackDown. I swear, at this point, I think he's just fucking with me. Like, he's... Because he opened this one with, and now we're going to experience some California love as we're in... And I'm like, no. You stop. You stop right now. I liked, Gargano. Yeah, that match was amazing. Zack Sabre Jr., that was just like... Talk about just like wrestling, you know? And the way that he gets out of holds, it's beautiful and it's not as flashy as everyone else. And so I do think that that's going to be one that was probably a surprise for people, because when you do hear Cruiserweight, you think like, oh, it's going to be a bunch of luchas. It's going to be a bunch of dudes from Japan. It's going to be real, flippy and whatever. And he was just like, nope, shh, I'm wrestling.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Him. I don't like him.
Not a fan?
At all.
You don't like it?
At all. Like, I'd seen him wrestle at PWG once. I actually saw him wrestle Tozawa, who was also in this tournament. And I was, Tozawa got over with me way more coming out of that match. I just appreciate his style more. But I was open to seeing, okay, because Sabre Jr. comes in with a lot of hype. People talk about him a lot all over. He's like the PWG champ right now, isn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
But yeah, I watched his match in the CWC, and I was very not into it.
Underwhelmed?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not even underwhelmed. It's like, I see what it is, and I see why some people appreciate it. I do not at all.
It is not for you.
It is not for me. Not little wiry man bending different things. Like, it's not entertaining for me really at all, you know?
I appreciate it, and then I look at it, and maybe this is just too much conditioning from WWE, and I go, well, how do you plug somebody like that in? Even in a cruiserweight division, I guess he's always the underdog. And even Rey Mysterio looked like somebody, he was like a little bulldog. He was like, he was a thick little dude to the point where you went, yeah, he could beat Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
What would a match be like with him and Big Show? But when they feel so thin, it just, it's hard for me to imagine. I recognize that's maybe my problem more than
it's the conditioning of WWE.
And I echo the same thing. I come from being steeped in programming where guys who look, even like you say, even if it's not a stature thing, but guys that look a little wider and beefier,
yeah,
it makes everything seem more legit because it seems like, you know, it doesn't seem to matter in any sort of real life how many holds this guy knew. If a guy bigger than him wanted to beat him up, it doesn't seem like these holds would stop him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. And if it were like, you know, amateur wrestling, then maybe it'd be different. But these guys are allowed to kick each other in the face.
Right in the face.
You know, right in the face.
But I actually, for a scrawny guy, I was way more invested in Jack Gallagher.
I was too.
His win.
I loved his.
Because he felt like, I kept waiting for him to be a heel. And then when I realized he was a face, I was like, oh, I can get behind this guy. Yeah. And the whole time, you found yourself rooting. There's something about him where you're rooting for him, and you're expecting him to just get demolished. So the fact that he stays in it and is skilled, he was what I felt watching him was what I expected to feel watching Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, I would go with that too. I felt very similarly.
Yeah, he does have a very, and it will be interesting to see how they would bring that into the WWE, because if you do have, you know, obviously you're not putting that dude up against like anyone even 50 pounds to 60 pounds bigger or anyone quicker. You know, can you imagine a match with like him and Dolph? They could do it. It would be fun. But a lot of it is like, how's he going to jump out of this thing and then turn it into a thing?
Right.
It is a quieter experience. And I don't, it's not that they couldn't do it. I don't know how much the non-Full Sail audience is going to get into it before they start yelling boring.
Right.
Yeah, I do hope
because
that
it's kind of quiet and chill.
I hope that people are paying attention who are watching it on the network because it's an opportunity to learn about different styles of wrestling. Like, what's submission wrestling? What is catch wrestling? What is power wrestling?
Yes.
What is technique? Like, you get to learn and see those things. It's really like
it's an education. It's a clinic. Yeah.
It's like Phoenix University for being a wrestling fan. Like, this
they're
is
actually
a series
saying
you take
moves.
Online.
Yeah. That thing we were talking about last week. They say moves.
They name them, and Moro seems to you can't stump the man. You know what I mean? He seems to know everything.
The moss covered three-handed family
credenza.
So that's some of the competitors who have caught our eyes. Do you guys have a pick for who might go all the way in the tournament?
I'm ready for more Kota. I'm certainly, and I've seen him in Japan, and he's great. Yeah, I'm ready to see more of that for sure.
Okay, so that's your dark horse to
well, he's not a dark horse
not
at all.
Not a dark horse. Yeah. He's your pick. You
he's
think
my
he's
pick.
Going to
yeah,
win.
Yeah, he's not a dark horse at all. I think he's a lot of people's picks. At least, I mean, he's going to be in the final four.
Right.
I would love it if he took it.
I came into it, like I said, only having seen a few of them, and I was really into Tozawa, and I really enjoyed his match and would like to see him do well, but I don't think he's going to win. I've been very impressed by Tony Nese. I really, really liked his match a lot. And he's the guy who I feel like, you know, he has a lot of different skills that they can probably build around some. So I'd like for him to advance. And I feel like he's going to have a spot probably in that final four, too. So I'd like to see what he does.
Okay. I like Drew Gulak a lot.
Yeah, Gulak's great.
You know, I didn't think I was going to like Gulak.
Right.
But I was like, oh, I like
him. Yeah, he's really good.
I dug him, man.
But my pick, I have to go with Jack Gallagher. There's something about him.
Yeah, he's
and
great.
I want to see him become a heel over the course.
Yeah.
Because he's proved that he's resilient. Now he's got to have that, for me, he's got to have that fail and then have him resort to cheating. And then when he sees that works, just how many shortcuts can he try to take to end a match quickly in advance in the tournament because it's his chance to prove his superiority, what a gentleman he is. Mm-hmm. So it's just any means necessary to achieve that end.
Yeah, no, I think he's an awesome built-in, ready-made character, and I definitely want to see him on my television more.
Yeah. So knowing now that there's going to be a cruiserweight division on Raw, and also knowing that now the cruiserweights, the Cruiserweight Classic, we keep saying, is different than anything else on WWE programming and how it's presented, how it's carried out. How do you fit the cruiserweight division into Raw? Is it a seamless part of everything else, or is it we are donating 30 to 45 minutes of our show to this division, or we're just going to showcase what's going on here, and it's like we're checking in on a different Olympic sport in the middle of swimming?
I think it's just going to be like anything else where it just goes seamlessly in with the rest of the divisions. I don't see them taking 40, you know, taking a half hour, 45 minutes out of anything that could be used to sell Flo Rida's newest album and instead spending that on a bunch of wrestling. I just don't see it. I think it's just going to be like anything else. It'll be like they'll have the cruiser fights and the cruiser, you know, the cruiserweight whatevers, but it's not going to be any different than the women's title or anything else. Like, I don't think that they're going to, it's not going to be a special place carved out where it just gets to be like Daniel Bryan and Mauro doing things and saying things and being great.
I mean, and Lord knows they should, you know, if they could keep it separate. Because then, you know, I still have these reservations about what's going to happen when you have them on Raw and you have them next to guys like Finn Balor, who they look just like. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know how they're going to deal with that. And having it separate would kind of answer all of those questions. But, you know, they're not going to change the turnbuckles or change the ropes.
No.
They're not going to do any of that. They're just going to put them on Raw and mix them in with everything else. And
you brought up a good point. There's going to be no Daniel Bryan and Mauro Ranallo, who have done such a great job of selling the division, getting us invested in those characters, understanding exactly what's happening at any given time. And that's not necessarily the Raw announced team's strength. Like, Corey Graves is great.
I think Corey will do a good job.
Yeah, and since he's already involved in a tournament, there's a natural carryover there.
That's true. But then Michael Cole has got to do the play-by-play. And he's not – this is not even saying anything about what he's doing anywhere else on the show, but I don't – in my mind, he's not the guy who sells me on the match. And that's part of the – announcer's job is to sell me on the story of the match and make sure that I'm continually invested.
No, Michael Cole's job is to sell you on the WWE as a whole. I have never thought of him as the guy that's like, he isn't the person selling the story of the match. He isn't even necessarily always the person who's selling the backstory of the match.
Right.
So no, I don't trust him with this.
I think he's getting phased out. The more I look at what's going on with that announce team right now, I feel like they're just grooming Byron to take his spot. And he's just angry about it. And
or maybe he'll wind up being like the head announced dude or whatever. I would be more than happy if it was just Byron and Corey again. That would be, but I've said that before. That would be great. I don't trust Cole.
I bet the next 2 years, I bet.
Cole's out?
I think so. I feel like that's what they're grooming Byron for, is to be like that guy.
If they're not grooming someone, then the three-man booths make no sense.
Right.
If they're not trying to change up something.
All right, before we leave the main event, before we take it home, how long do you think the WWE will keep the cruiserweight division around? If like we're saying, it's not the perfect conditions for it, how long do they give it before it's relegated either to just an annual tournament or they sort of phase it out? Because they haven't really ever successfully maintained a cruiserweight division the way it deserves to be. How much time do you guys think?
I think if they keep the tournament going every year, and they can keep it going forever, because it can reinforce itself via the tournament.
Like re-energizing, yeah.
Right, because if you just have them on Raw, I mean, very quickly it will be swallowed into everything else, you know, and they'll just be the guys at the food fight, you know, like it just won't be a thing.
The guy's crashing into my cake.
Right, exactly.
I think it'll last as long as the brand split lasts.
Oh,
however long that is, I think that's as long as we get a cruiserweight division.
That's a very good answer.
Then may we step on this glass, like at my wedding, and may it last 1 year for every piece of glass created by the stomp. You're listening to Tights and Fights. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin. With me in the booth are
Danielle Radford
and
Mike Eagle.
Come back. Somebody throw a rope down off of the edge of whatever Mike just fell from. To finish off the show, we're going to put over three things from the world of wrestling that we think are awesome. This is the three count. Danielle, kick us off. What do you want to put over?
I am putting over. We don't have a clip for it because it's in the written. It was written. someone wrote it with their fingers. As I'm sure a lot of you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson got real cranks about someone on the set of the new Fast and Furious movie. And so he wrote a little bit about it. And I won't quote the entire thing. I'll just do the last paragraph in my worst The Rock impersonation. Oh, this is going to be so bad. I do not know if I'm going to get this. Be supportive of me.
Here, wait, I'll throw. Let's go to the clip.
The bottom line is it'll play great for the movie and fits this Hob character that's embedded in my DNA extremely well. Can I put in a sick there? Does that work orally? Because that's not a great sentence. Okay, the producer in me is very happy about this part. Final week on Fast 8 and I will finish strong. Hashtag Iceman cometh. Hashtag F8. Hashtag zero tolerance for candy asses. And a lot of people thought that he was talking about Clint Eastwood's kid because in that interview they did where they were like, PC sucks, or whatever, they were like, too many people are candy asses. But now it's coming out that it's Vin DZD's. And Vin DZD's is real cranks because I'm assuming it's because he used to be like the big strong guy and then The Rock came in and no one's the big strong guy when The Rock is on set except for The Rock.
That's right.
So that's what I'm putting over. I'm putting over The Rock having the kindest, most polite temper tantrum on social media.
So many hashtags in that temper tantrum.
So many hashtags.
It's like an uncle on Facebook. Just tons of Uncle Dwayne's is on Facebook.
Uncle Dwayne's got something to say. He was not happy about the last family outing.
Oh, Vin Diesel, we all got beef with you now. Sorry.
D&D ain't saving you this time.
There is no saving throw from this. Mike, what are you going to put over?
Speaking of Ciampa and Gargano, oh man, they did the best thing that happened to my internet all weekend long. Had to be, what, Saturday? I started seeing hashtag glorious bomb, and I thought it was just some spectacular new wrestling move that I hadn't been privy to, but no, it is them. This long running kind of work shoot prank thing with them and Bobby Roode,
yeah,
where they kind of get in front of him and take a selfie with his music playing in the background. And he looks annoyed, and at some point, he kind of nods approval for it. It's pretty fantastic. Got a little clip of the song right here.
Glorious. No, I won't give in. I won't give in till I'm victorious. And I will defend. I will defend.
And it started this amazing trend of people trying to mimic it, which is hilarious for those who got it very right and those who got it very wrong.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who are just playing the song and staring into their phones. it's very creepy.
It's like a Wunderlich test for sociopaths.
Yes. Wow. Wow. Wow.
Deep sports cut.
There you go. That's what I'm here for.
But yeah, no, everybody go make a glorious bomb. Do it the right way, please.
Send it to us, please.
Yes, send it. Yeah, hashtag glorious bomb and send it to @tightsfights. That's our Twitter handle, guys. If you don't know, now you know. I want to put over the one-man band himself, Heath Slater. We referred to this a little bit earlier in the program, but he's the hottest free agent in WWE. He had a match against Rhino on SmackDown Tuesday night, and beforehand he pleaded for his opponent to let him win, not for him, but for his family. Here's a clip.
He's given me the opportunity to face you, and if I beat you, I get a WWE contract for SmackDown Live.
So I've already got my contract.
Look, man, I've got two kids. I really, really need this job. I just bought a pool, and can you just help me out here?
Look, last week, I won my primary election in Michigan. I have constituents I need to impress, and I can't let them down.
My four kids are my constituents, and I can't let them down either.
I thought you just said you had two kids.
I meant four.
Constituents. What kind of pool do you have?
What does it matter?
I mean, is it above ground, in ground?
It's a very nice above ground pool.
Sorry, man. I can't help you out.
Lord, it's Hal. We don't talk very much, but I have something to ask of you. Please, please, before Heath Slater gets his contract, please let him have 25 kids. And please start a web series where he interviews other wrestlers on floaties in his above ground pool.
Right, it was such an elitist. What's wrong with an above ground pool?
But it's so, like, that's, was that going to be the determining factor there? The writer's like, oh, an in ground pool? This guy is probably seriously in debt. Is it fresh water? Is it fresh water pool?
And then they announced him going off on how he banged his cousin or whatever. Like, yes. Yeah, oh, well, you know,
lots of
he's from Virginia, so he's a cousin fucker.
Well, and by the end of the show, he had seven kids.
Seven kids.
He had seven kids.
Somebody owes his wife an apology.
Yes.
You know, she saw that and was like, why are they telling people that I fucked my cousin?
Exactly. And by the time the seventh one was born, it just walked out. That was how bad it was. But there you go. Check it out if you haven't seen it already. Heath Slater and his ever-expanding family on SmackDown. That does it for this week on Tights and Fights. We are a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. Our hosts are Danielle Radford and Mike Eagle, along with me, Hal Lublin. Our producer slash advocate is Julian Burrell. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Colin Anderson. If you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. We'll be back next week to talk even more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.